Hi everyone. Before we start the show, I wanted to give a quick heads up that there were some technical issues with this episode. So apologies if it sounds like my side of the conversation was recorded with a tin can. Hopefully this will be the only hiccup that we have with the PlayStation Plus Game Club this year. But again, thank you for listening and on with the show. What's up, internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I'm your host, Kevin Garaventa, aka the Portland Kevin, and this is a show where we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus library and break it down for your entertainment, information, and amusement. Today, we are talking about Cursed to Golf. It was developed by Chuai Labs in Kyoto, Japan, and published in Thunderful Publishing. This is a roguelike side-scrolling game where you golf your way out of purgatory. So joining me for the first time, you know him as Maximum Carnage from the Trophy Talk Discord. It's Max. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Kevin. I feel warmly welcomed. Excited to finally be on the show. We've been trying to make this happen for what feels like a little over half a year, but we're here during the festive break to make it work. I appreciate you taking the time out of your holiday break to accommodate me, but yeah, for those who don't know me, as Kevin said, my name is Max, and as my accent might give away, I am from Buckinghamshire in the UK, which is situated in between Oxford and London.
Well, it's great to have you here, so thank you so much for kind of celebrating the holidays with me in this very unusual game.
Thank you very much for having me, man. Yeah, I'm excited to dive into it.
Yeah. So before we do, I do want to talk a little bit about what you were up to recently as far as some of your projects go. And you've been running one of the sort of the side projects over on the Trophy Talk Discord, and there have been some changes over there.
Yeah, so I've recently got into the whole content creation scene from like a podcasting angle in the last few months. So I have taken over the Trophy Talk podcast DLC pack shows as the host, and beginning in January 2025, myself and my new co-host, Zach Ellery, have renamed the show to the Mooglecast and are officially transforming what was originally a patron-only show into a full show within the Trophy Talk network. If you're a listener of Colin, Daryl, and Josh's work, then you probably already knew that. But there is an announcement episode that went up a few days ago as of the time of recording. So in case anything I just said sounds like a load of bullshit, you can go check that out. But a DLC pack, now newly named Mooglecast, is a once-a-month general video game-centric podcast where myself and Zach will sit down with a guest chair to talk about all matters of video game topics. Some of the recent episodes include 4 years of PS5, how the classic catalogue on PlayStation Premium can be improved, and what PS1 and PS2 games we want to see come over to the service, all that fun stuff. So if that sounds like something you'd be into and my horrible British accent isn't as off-putting, then please do come over and check us out. Zach, my new co-host, is from New Zealand, so his accent sounds a little bit nicer than mine. Helps balance things out.
Well, yeah, and Zach and I have also been in talks on having him over here on the Game Club, and I'm kind of excited for that. I'm also excited to announce that we are planning to join each other on your Mooglecast for the upcoming episode about the Nintendo 64. So that one I'm really excited about recording. There's a lot that I have to say about that system. So I think that's going to be the first episode of the Mooglecast in 2025. So
correct.
We're kicking off the year pretty well. And related to that, also the PlayStation Plus Game Club was announced as joining the Trophy Talk Network as well. So quick bit of housekeeping that I want to do. If you enjoy this episode and want to hear more, please like and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening. And it really helps us show up in more recommended feeds if you hit the like button and also give a review. That tends to make it show up more in recommended algorithms on other people's podcasts, apps and stuff out there. And then if you want to be part of an episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club, you can send in an email at psplusgameclub@gmail.com or find our Discord channel to write and talk about the game there. And then also find the Trophy Talk Network's Discord channel, because the PlayStation Plus Game Club just became part of the Trophy Talk Network. And that Discord has a larger community as well as connections to other shows like your MoogleCast and the Trophy Talk podcast proper that started the whole thing. The Trophy Talk Network also has a Patreon that we are a part of now. But for the month of January and possibly February, we're not sure when we're going to relaunch it. But for now, it is offline. So almost all of the benefits that you get from their Patreon are opened up to everyone for free right now. So go over to the Discord, the Trophy Talk Discord, and check those out. Take advantage of them, you know, whatever you want to do. I think of it as kind of like a small demo session for what we are planning to do once the Patreon actually goes live.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I'm aware, writing in questions or comments, anything to the show, is pretty much free for the next 2 months. So
yeah,
try it out.
There are going to be other things as well, like where you might be able to record a message for one of the episodes, and then, you know, we insert it into that episode. Or relating to the game club, what we plan on doing is having just a quarterly vote for what people like want to see, you know, what game is covered in the PlayStation Plus Game Club. And so once every 3 months, we're going to have a vote to talk about, you know, one specific game that is chosen by the Discord. So that one is I think it's going to be launching in January for the March game, but we'll have to see what the schedule is. And now, since we've got all of that stuff out of the way, let's start talking about Curse to Golf. This is like one of those games that I would not have played had you not suggested us actually playing it for the show. And it's difficult to describe. It's going to sound like a lot of gibberish if you don't know a lot of the terms that we're going to be throwing out there. But this is a rogue-like side-scrolling golf game where you have to golf your way through 18 holes that are randomly generated, and your character is trying to golf his way out of purgatory after he's died. So that there is a lot to, if you don't know what any of that means, that's okay. My mother-in-law listens to the show. So, hey, Rosemary, hope your day is going well, but she might not know what any of that means. So a roguelike is, for those who don't know, is where the game is like the layout of what you're doing is randomly generated. So the game is going to be different every single time you play it. And then if your character dies or you fail at whatever the task you're trying to do along the way, if you fail that, you're going to be sent all the way back to the beginning and you start over with nothing you picked up along the way. So it's kind of like the game has no checkpoint system in a sense, and you just have to go at it over and over and over, and you have to kind of just like test your luck and hope that you have the right circumstances to really succeed at whatever game this is. And some roguelikes are a lot harder than others. I found this one in particular somewhat easy after a few runs, and oftentimes that's because of the equipment they give you and certain combinations of things and circumstances that can really like break the game in a sense. There are also circumstances where it's just like, you know, you have a great run, you're doing really well, and then something out of your control just ruins your day and you have to start all over. And I have tons of stories about that from when I was playing The Binding of Isaac. I have a love-hate relationship with that game. We'll talk about that later, maybe. But with this one, as far as like a roguelike goes, you told me that you don't really play a lot of roguelikes. How did you end up jumping into this?
I must admit, like, I have no idea. The first time I ever heard about this game was from Kyle Stevenson at the Trophy Room and 6-1 Indie. He was praising this game for a short while. And so it's kind of always been in the background for me. But then I noticed when we originally had another game that we was going to talk about this episode, which kind of fell through. But I noticed that my brother was also playing this one. And I always like to check out what he's playing, because he plays some very unusual games compared to me. So I thought I'd check it out, and I just had a brilliant time, in all honesty. Yeah. So I started this game on like the 4th of December and finished it on the 10th. Yeah, I could not for the life of me put this game down from first trophy to platinum. The gameplay loop has this kind of addictiveness that keeps you coming back, but also respects your time with like 5 to 15 minute like bite-sized levels that can at times present you with multiple ways to progress, with shortcuts or high risk, high reward moments or forks in the road. And of course, with this being a roguelike, not every playthrough is going to be the same. Not every first, second, third, or fourth hole is going to be the same hole as the last round you played. Some levels will pop up again on subsequent playthroughs, like I experienced. But as I said, most levels will present multiple ways in which you can tackle them. I feel like there is a fair amount of leeway as well. The game is punishing, but is forgiving in that you feel like, if you feel like you screwed up a hole big time, then you can close the game and start from the beginning of that hole again with the same number of shots and cards you had the first time you started that hole. So yeah, a little bit of leeway here and there.
Yeah, there are some loopholes that you can get through. And when you mentioned the levels, that did remind me that I started to suspect that all of these levels are actually, they're either handcrafted completely.
They are.
And they're, okay, so they're not randomized. And I started to suspect that after I saw a few of them. So this is not a true, pure roguelike where the layouts are going to be randomized. And, you know, there is supposed to be a way through each hole that you should be able to make it. But the fact that you're getting sent back to the beginning if you fail is part of that roguelike DNA. And then, you know, you also have all this equipment that can break the game for to your advantage. So there are those elements to them. But when it comes to roguelikes, I really tend to stay away from them because of how punishing they can feel. And this one at first really did feel punishing, because I didn't quite know how to take advantage of some of those cards that you get that can give you superpowers. I didn't also understand that, like, oh, pins are something that you really need to jump on and take advantage of. So the first few runs that I had were really frustrating, but it did grow on me after I started to find a rhythm and I found a couple of things that worked for what I wanted to do. And then I had a strategy, and then it got easier and easier as I was going. But yeah, it is forgiving in some sense that you can take a detour around some of those rules. Like, if you've gotten down to like your last couple shots in a hole and you know you're not going to make it, you can close the game out and then restart that hole when you boot the game up again. And I did that so many times. It was, I really took advantage of it, especially in the first set of holes to get through. The story of this, and it's like really cute, it's really fun to watch, is where when you're going through the tutorial of how to play the game, your character is golfing on the 18th hole of a major golf tournament. And that process teaches you how to golf sort of in a side-scrolling kind of way. And then as you continue driving your ball toward the 18th hole, there's a storm that's coming in that eventually like just starts to pour rain and then lightning strikes your character and you get killed. Then he wakes up in some sort of afterlife area, and it is a like a golf course that he's now walking around, and he meets this character named the Scotsman, who introduces him to the whole concept of, if you golf your way out of here, then you get to live on in golf heaven. That's the whole story of the game. I thought it was adorable. What did you think?
Yeah, I wasn't overly mad on the story itself. I think it's just like it was just serviceable for me. But I do agree that it's like it's cute, and like the sound effects that they make. There's no voice acting in the game, but the sound effects kind of reminded me of like that whole Banjo-Kazooie kind of way of speaking, where you know the main character doesn't say a single word, not even a sentence, but he goes he says nothing, but the other characters that you encounter in this game do like sort of they go, oh, so you want to know about this and so. Yeah
What's really funny too is, yes, the characters don't also have they don't have any voice acting either, but they do have text boxes that they speak in, and what I thought was very funny is that they would say something and then your character would respond. But yes, there is no text for that character to respond with. However, a lot of the time when they would say, when these other characters would say something, my character would respond with just that 5 second sound effect of like, blah, 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 blah. And I would be thinking to myself, well, I want to ask them this, or like, this is what I would respond with. And then the character that's speaking actually like takes their next sentence as if I had actually said what I was thinking. And yeah. So the writing in here is perfect in that they don't even have to have my own character speaking for them to know what it is that I want to ask next. And even though that text isn't up on screen, they know exactly what I'm thinking when I want to respond to something their character just said. I think that shows that what little writing is here is really good.
It's funny. It kind of like it comes off like they assume what you're thinking, and I felt a little bit frustrated by it, but in a humorous way.
but then you know, also times I think to myself, God damn it, they know me so well. Like they were right. Like, You mentioned the sound effects. Kind of related to that, also the graphical style of this reminded me a lot of the 16-bit era, but it leans more, for me at least, it leans more toward the Sega Genesis and the Mega Drive style, like graphical style, rather than the Super Nintendo. And I see that a lot in like the color style that they have for the game, how there's like multi-layered parallax scrolling in the background. So and then like every once in a while you're gonna see checkerboard stuff, which just makes me think of Sonic the Hedgehog. So there's a lot of that in there, and I felt like it really does mimic a lot of what I saw on Sega way back in the
day. So I, like many other people and yourself included, have been playing games for quite literally as long as I can remember. I have vague memories of the Genesis Mega Drive era. I'm 31, so I kind of missed it. But my main era that I entered in the media known as video games was the original PlayStation era. But even still, the 2D pixel presentation is not only like expertly crafted, but is also, it also brings to me, a gamer of 25 plus years, a sense of warm nostalgia. And playing this game in December when we're all tucked up in our homes, like nice and warm, only heightens the overall coziness that the game emits in its presentation. Like, honestly, light a scented candle, put on some comfy PJs, and settle on a cold winter's night with this game. It's so cozy. But as a greenkeeper myself, actually, this is my profession. I've been a greenkeeper for 10 plus years now. I kind of appreciate that there's a lot of golf references in here, i.e. the birdies that accompany the Forgotten, one of the characters, Eagle and Albatross, as well as the shop Eternity, It's a little cheesy, but a lot of thought was put into all these things that make the game work. However, one thing I did notice, and I feel like was a missed opportunity, was the naming of the cursed holes. These are like special high risk, high reward holes where, you know, the payout is worth the risk, where the greenkeeper, the main bad in the game, will basically puts a curse on you whilst you play the hole. Anything from no idols to high winds to extra bouncy balls. But yeah, I would like to know why these holes weren't called Greenkeeper's Revenge or Revenge Holes for short. Similar to how some courses out in the real world hold special Greenkeeper's Revenge events, where the course is set up in a way that makes it incredibly difficult for participants to navigate. I feel like that was a missed one there.
All the others, though, like I didn't know about that actual term. So that's great to know. And yeah, there are so many small jokes that were like small puns that they throw in here. And yeah. I did find a lot of them pretty funny. And there were a few where the first time I saw them, I did chuckle a lot. So, you know, that really does add to the cute style of the game. And how it adds to that coziness. One other thing about the sound itself and the sound design. For some backstory, we live in an apartment, and we live on the top floor of our building, and we have birds living in our ceiling. And you know, we see them fly in and out every once in a while. We hear them every once in a while fluttering around in there, chirping, whatever. And there is a bird call that is in the game. But for the first like 3 or 4 days that I was playing this, I would hear the bird call in the game. And we both look at each other and be like, was that them in the scene? Yeah, that was them. And then like after a while, I would hear it over and over again and realize that I was only hearing it while I was playing the game. And so I finally said like, no, that's in the game. Yeah, that's that. That's the game. That's not the birds. So the neighbors aren't up at like 11 o'clock at night. We had to. we were fooled really easily by this game and our particular circumstances. But still, like, it being roguelike, it is frustrating at sometimes. So, you know, if you are golfing through this hole and you have only, you know, 5 shots left before you reach zero and get kicked out, it still feels very devastating in a sense to just see mountain of a course ahead of you and feel like, well, this is impossible. And there were a couple of nights where I thought to myself, I don't know if I'm going to finish this before we record, but we'll see. And it did eventually pick up, like all roguelike. Yeah. And once you do find your rhythm, you find a good set of equipment, then you get some confidence in you and you can actually push forward. So we did see a couple of people in the Trophy Talk Discord playing it and saying like, nah, this is not for me. And you know, that's the nature of roguelike, where they just, they can really push people away if they don't hit right away.
Yeah, meanwhile, me, on my probably second or third round, I just had all the luck.
Yeah.
And just breezed through it.
Now, that's a good segue, because your luck is attributed to the pins that you got early on. So
yes.
This is like part of the equipment that this particular roguelike has. And you can use cards to give you special powers for one shot that you're about to take, or something interesting like changes regarding your ball or whatever, but like it does something weird on the course for one turn. And then there are pins which also have those same abilities, but they are consistent and unlimited most of the time. So
yeah,
some examples of those being cards or pins are like your ball turns into a rocket that you can control, and you end up like being able to fly it around the course for a certain amount of time. And there are different like variations of this where, like, you know, one version of it is faster than the others, but it's harder to turn. Then there's like another one that just lets you, you know, as your ball is flying through the air, you can change the trajectory of it once, and you can have it like reach up into other ledges or other locations that are harder to reach that way. Mm-hmm. And that that kind of power I found very useful early on. I loved that. And then as you're like putting your way through this course or driving your way through the course, there are these statues that you can hit to add more shots to your shot counter, so you can survive longer as you try and drive toward the hole. Then, you know, there are cards that will destroy all of those idols at once, or the pin will just that you're wearing can destroy all those idols as you start the course, or as you start the hole rather. And that was one that I got where I was just like, oh, like now I, instead of starting the hole with 5 shots, I start the hole with 15. So because all the silver idols are destroyed and I don't have to worry about hitting those, I just get those for free. So now I feel like I have a real fighting chance to get through this hole, and I don't have to hit every single idol as I'm going by.
Yeah. Yeah, because like even the silver idols, like they're only worth 2 shots, but it takes a shot to get there, and sometimes it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny, like the game very much encourages you to use these cards and pins. The cards and pins are what really gives the game its flair. But for whatever reason, on my very first playthrough, I wanted to see how far I could get without using any cards.
It
wasn't very far. But it was nice to have basic cards that like increased your shot count and rocket balls, but I never learnt what the benefits like the ice and electric ball powers actually provided. I did switch on the game earlier and tried out the ice ball. It's what I thought it would have done, and that's Freezer Lakes. But yeah, the fireball was obvious in that it burnt like vines, but I think that was my only complaint about some of the cards, in that they could have either been more descriptive in what the benefits were and how you could use them, or there could have been like a video tutorial or free access to use them in the driving range. I think you can use some in the driving range, but not all of them.
The same goes for the pins, where I would look at the pin the first time I looked at the pin shop, and I was like, well, like, these are the same as the cards. How are they different? And you know, they seem like it like a really good advantage to have. Like, oh, you can have the U-turn ball again, which does that change. That's the one that changes your trajectory. You can have that in a pin. So what's the difference from that to a card? I can, like, the cards are one-time use. So like, what's going to happen to the pin? And the only way to figure that out really is to just spend what money you've earned on this pin and then try it out on the next hole. But once you buy it, your game is saved. So, you know, you don't have any way to just like go back on this saying like, oh, I didn't really like this pin. You know, what else can I do? Or that was a waste of a card. You know, I feel like I've wasted my resource that could have been better used somewhere else. So letting you demo some of this stuff would have been helpful before you actually have to spend it. That being said, like the pin that you told me you got on your second run sounds like it won
the game for me, man. It's just like, oh yeah, his free pins to choose from. This one will give you 100 shots, so you can just spend your time and have fun. And I'm just like, well, of course I'm gonna take that. And you know, I think I still use like the cards that they gave you to like increase my shot count. I was like still wary of it, but I ended up finishing the game with like 36 shots left over.
Wow. Yeah. And you told me that the shots roll over from one to the next. I don't think they actually do. I think they just change how much money you get after every hole. And so that's because like I seem to be like finishing a hole with like 20 shots left at sometimes. And then I start the next one with 12. And I'm like, where did the 8 shots go? What happened?
Okay, well, I'm not sure. Maybe that had something to do with my pin, probably.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I must admit, like, I got dumb luck with this game. I definitely, like, it worked against me for this podcast because I feel like I haven't seen a lot of the game.
Well, I'll admit that, like, yes, I was very jealous of the fact that you got that pin and then told me about it. But, you know, I did keep going through and keep playing. And eventually I got a pin for myself that I feel like broke the game. Or a couple that really did. And the first one was that one that destroys all the silver rattles on a hole.
So yeah, I saw that one as well.
I'm starting the hole with 15 shots instead of 5. And yep, that made the game feel a lot more relaxing because I didn't have to worry about, you know, what are my next few shots going to be? And, you know, if I mess one up, it feels like I am down to the wire in surviving this. So
yeah,
it felt like I had the room to screw up a couple of shots. The second one that I got was the rocket ball, and this pin just at every single shot lets you turn on that rocket ball power. And so I stopped actually playing the game as a golf game, and instead it was just me making my ball hop from one location to the next, because it would just fly up in the air and I would control where I want to go. And so what I'd have it do is just, like, I'd look ahead and look at where I wanted my ball to land and say, like, well, okay, this is the right spot. Here it goes. Just going to drop it right there. There was another pit that lets you just stop time and your ball drops wherever it is in the air. And that was one that helped a lot. But when I got that rocket ball, I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I'm using for the rest of the game. And there were other, like, pins that came up that was like, here, you can use the phase ball, like, every time. And I, or like, you can tee off with the phase ball. So your first shot on the hole lets you do that. But with that one, it was like, okay, well, cool. Like, I can shoot it really far and it flies through all the different obstacles, and then I can choose when it reappears and it's not a ghost. So now my ghost ball can just, like, fly through walls and stuff. That's great, but I don't feel like I have as much control over it. Whereas, like, the rocket ball, I was, in a sense, it was like I was driving my ball forward with an iron rather than the driver. But I had so much more control over this that it felt like I was cheating. And that is, like, the biggest hallmark of a roguelike, where you get something that is so broken that it feels like you can just fly through the game. It sounds like you got the one of the best pins to get early on. But were there any other powers that you started using that just felt broken?
I mean, not off the top of my head. I feel like the 100 shots was probably like the dumbest luck anybody could have gotten. I did encounter all the idols destroyed, because I had one that destroyed, I think, both silver and gold ones.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize that you could also buy extra pins. I must have been drunk when I played this game when I started, because I was just like, I didn't know you could like combo cards until I was going for the hole in one trophy as well. Because like, you could combine portal and drill ball as well.
Yeah.
And I remember spending ages trying to look for the perfect hole for a hole in one, but I bypassed the hole that I eventually did it on like 20 times.
Oh, son of a bitch. Okay, so like, to clarify, you get 3 slots for pins, so you can have up to 3 pins, and some of them can interact with each other, and some of them are, like, exclusive to that. So, like, when I did have the phase ball, you can tee off with phase ball or tee off with whatever. That meant that my rocket ball ability could not be used on the first shot, because the other pin was overriding it. So, you know, there are other things that and like other ways these pins interact with each other. But yes, you get up to three, and then you can use cards to do other things to interact with them. But you're right with like saying that you may have missed out on a few other things, like the drill ball, until you went for the hole in one shot. So it's just like the game is like forcing you to like find a way to get your ball into the hole without like even playing the game itself. Especially with those four trophies that ask you to finish the hole in four shots, three shots, two shots, and one. It's almost like the game is turning into a puzzle game. And you have to figure out, okay, what are the powers that I have that will let me drill through the earth and down to another layer where the hole is, or, you know, use the portals to then find a way to phase my ball further and further or whatever. Like it is like, how am I going to use these different powers to combine together some sort of strategy that will get me there in one single?
Yeah, that's a really good way of looking at it. I never thought of it like that. Yeah. That's genius.
One of my favorite stories was that I was going for that hole in one shot, and I had seen this hole earlier where you tee off in one direction and the hole that you're trying to reach is directly behind you in the opposite direction. So
yes,
you just have to, if you've got the drill ball, you just drill right through the wall and just land right in the hole. Or if you've got the phase ball, you could pretty much do the same kind of thing. But I had neither. So it was just like, well, shit, what am I going to do? Here's an idea. Okay, so I've got the portals, and the portal just barely reaches through that wall over into the room that has the hole. So instead of going full circle all the way around the course, I could just skip that and use the portals. But when I shoot my ball in there, it's just going to bounce around wildly. And maybe I can use the spin mechanic and like fix that. But wait a second. Hold on. I've also got the magnetic one. It was the time stop. So
yes,
I have to watch really carefully like where my ball is. And if I can see the hole below the screen, then I'm going to stop time and just have the ball drop. And it bounced like four times around the room before I was finally like, okay, stop. And it landed just on the very edge of the hole. And I was like, damn it, no. So it was like so close. And I closed the game and quit out.
Yeah, quick, shut off the game. Yeah.
And try again.
But still issue with that spin ball, man.
I got it in there, yeah. Because like the spin mechanic is something that I don't think I ever actually figured out how to use really well. And so like you can kind of will your ball around after you've hit it and it's bouncing around the room, but it doesn't feel like it's that responsive.
How about that's my saving grace?
It really was. Like, how did you end up using the spin mechanic?
Pretty much the same story as you, man. I think I encountered that same level. Maybe. I think I had to shoot over a lake, like a small lake. But the ball, like the drill ball, wouldn't quite reach that far. So I had to use a portal to stretch about three quarters across the lake, then use the drill ball to go to finish getting over the lake, go through the wall. And once I came out the other side, land near the hole and just let the spin gods do its thing.
Because you can kind of control the spin of your ball after it's
done. Yeah.
But.
Yeah,
like there's no actual like full control of it, so
no.
It's not very reliable. But still, it is one of those things. Like every once in a while, I would look at it and be like, I can't believe that worked. Oh my god! Like, like I got it to like land on a TNT box. The TNT box blows up, and then the hole like starts to drop down into that opening. And I need it to avoid the spikes that are down there, which are pretty much like dropping your ball in water, but. You know, I couldn't believe that, like, oh my god, I avoided the spikes because of the spin.
Just landing on a small island with like both sides has got like spikes on the edge as well. Yeah. I've done that a few times.
Did you end up talking
land to the ball perfectly?
Did you ever talk to the ball every once in a while? Like, stop, 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 stop.
I'm pretty sure there must have been a little bit of that. Yeah. You'd have to ask my girlfriend about that one. She'd probably confirm that. Usually, I think I did talk to it, but I think most of the time I probably swore it. Cursed at golf, cursed at the ball.
We also should talk about some of the different areas that you golf through. There are four like of these biomes, so to speak, that or environments that you see. There are the greens, the dunes, the caves, and then hell. And each one of these is sort of overseen by a different character that you encounter who runs the shop, the Eternity. They sell you stuff out of the shop, and then at the end of a certain set of levels, they will actually duel you in a sort of like a race to the hole, where you each take turns taking a shot, and you have to reach the hole before they do. And if they win, it's like getting killed, and you just start over from the very beginning. They also have special powers, and instead of they are using cards. They just have one special ability that will give them a big advantage when it comes to going through the hole that you're trying to reach. So it's kind of like a boss level, but a little bit different in terms of like you actually having to fight them. It's more just kind of like if you ever played Diddy Kong Racing, where when you reach the boss level, you have to race the boss to a certain finish line. This kind of feels like the same kind of way. Also, another game made by Rare. You've talked about Banjo-Kazooie. This kind of has that same style.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, we start off at the greens. But yeah, the greens are easily, for me, like the levels with the best-looking aesthetic, the mix of like the luscious greens and deep purples with the blacks. Really nice work there.
Yeah, yeah. And then the greens are run by the Scotsman. He's the guy who introduces you to this whole concept of golfing through the afterlife and trying to golf your way out of here. So it felt kind of like a betrayal when he said, I'm going to tee off against you. And it's like, why? Like, you're encouraging me to get out of here. Why are you doing this?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, he's giving you. I saw it more as like a friendly challenge. Just like, oh yeah, you really think you're good? Like, let's see if you can overcome me. If you can do that, then I have all the faith in you, kind of thing. I thought he was a very friendly gentleman.
Yes, yes, he was quite nice, but still, it was like, hey man, I thought you were my friend. But after you best him, you get to the dunes, which has a lot more sand, so there's a lot more sand traps to get through. Other parts of the course have kind of an oasis kind of feel, so it makes more sense that there's water there. They also introduced the spikes, and those were very annoying. This was the area where I got the destroy all silver idols kind of power that pin. That's where I started to feel like a little bit more comfortable in what I was doing, so I felt good. And I started to realize that I should use my cards a lot more to at least try and survive to the next hole. So my mentality was not try and make it all the way to the end. Let's just see if I can make it to the next hole or the next set of holes, the next biome, whatever. So I started to get a little more comfortable with this and comfortable with the idea that, hey, failure is okay. I can probably close out the game fast enough and try the hole over again. And I think I have enough cards that I can survive. And also I have a lot of money so I can start buying more at the shop. So I started to aim my trajectory toward the shop whenever I could.
Yeah.
But this is where I think I hit the hardest obstacle of the game. and it was not meant to be. And I think you saw some of this in the Discord that I was posting about. But
yep.
I got to the boss level of that, which is against the Explorer. And she floats around the course after she hits her, takes her shot, and will change the shape of the course. And that forces you to have to adapt and drive through a harder layout than she did. So kind of unfair, but she would glitch out and hit her ball into the water. I guess she's not the one glitching out, her ball is, but the ball would start to sink to the bottom of that water and then immediately reappear at the top of it again and then sink again and appear and then sink over and over and over. It would eventually just appear above an open space and slowly sink down through the air to the ground. And once it hit the ground there, it would just stop and she would move to that. So she was glitching out and skipping most of the hole itself. So it felt like the game was breaking and it wasn't meant to. And she would just skip the entire fight and say that I had to start over. So that was very discouraging. I was really frustrated at that. And I would close the game and open it up and try again. And the same thing would happen over and over again. And after five times that night, I was just like, you know what? I've tried. And I think this game is busted. So this is the last that I can do for the game. And I'm going to have to watch the rest on YouTube. I'm sorry. But I was like, I'm going to bed. I'm just frustrated. Next day.
Yeah.
Go
on.
Well, the next day I came in again and said okay, I'm going to try again. And so I made it and she ended up not hitting her ball into the water, instead hit it somewhere else and it landed somewhere. So she had a better shot this time. Ended up continuing to play through the course. I was ahead of her at one point and something happened, but the ball itself glitched out again. And this time reappeared somewhere else in the course. And it was further back from where she was supposed to be. So now I was further ahead than she was. And I thought well, this time the glitch, it just worked in my favor. That's fine. She hit the ball into the water again. And this time it kept looping over and over, trying sinking and then reappearing, sinking and reappearing. And after a few times, it just reappeared above the water and she teleported to it and just stayed there waiting to get some solid ground to then hit the ball off of again. Of course, it's floating there in the air above the water. And I sent a screenshot to the Discord saying here she is, just waiting for eternity to be ready to hit the ball. So I am just going to close this out again. The game is cursed. This sucks. That was my breaking point, but I came back to it again the next night and said, I'll give you one more shot. And this time, nothing happened. It was perfectly fine. And I beat her and moved on to the caves. But I almost didn't finish the game because of a glitch that kept happening.
Yeah, I did notice this game definitely has some teething issues that need to be addressed. It's been out for quite a while, so I'm assuming that they're probably done with the service in this game. But yeah, I didn't have anything quite as bad. I think the worst I had was backing out into the main menu and then pressing continue, and I would be hit with a black screen and just constantly hear the sound of lightning. And it just would, not load, and then I'd have to back out of the game entirely and just relaunch it. But yeah, that happened quite a lot for me, which is a bit frustrating when I was going for particular holes, the hole in one. But yeah, also I could probably understand your frustration with her, because she's kind of she comes across a bit of a bitch. I don't know if you notice it when you're playing against her, she just looks so uninterested. She's just constantly reading her diary. And when she goes to hit her ball, she's not even looking at it and does a backswing. it's just like definitely like the Explorer, I think, is a bit of a bitch. But yeah, just going back to the dunes, I mean, yeah, they're quite interesting because the courses are designed around like the desert like landscape, which naturally means you have a lot more bunkers to play. You can find many sand dune courses like out in the real world, mainly the southwest of America and the Middle East, that are quite literally like this. Think Sand Valley in Wisconsin. You also would have seen a few courses like this on PGA 2K games as well. It's cool that that was taken into consideration during development as one thing I noticed.
That's really cool, huh? I had no idea. And then the last like full course, or the last full like biome, are the caves. And this is where you meet the Forgotten, who you mentioned earlier. She's the one who has those two birds that talk for her. Great puns, where the two birds are named Eagle and Albatross. So
yeah.
Albatross is the four under par. Is that correct?
This is where my golf knowledge gets a little bit hairy. Okay. But I think, yeah, yes.
Okay.
I think it. Yeah, if it's a par five, don't take my word for it.
Well, I mean, you know, while we're talking here, I'm just going to do some quick Googling. So,
yeah, I am a groundsman for a golf course, but I don't have much interest in ever playing around a golf, if I'm totally honest. I enjoy the job, but okay, not so much the game.
Well, in golf, an albatross, also known as a double eagle, is a rare and highly prized achievement where a golfer scores three strokes under par on a single hole. So yes, mm-hmm. the most common way to achieve an albatross is to sink the ball in two strokes on a par five hole.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I was right.
Yes. Yes, you were. But yes, the puns that they use for these names are great. And then the idea that she's just there, she's been there for so long that she is now just a skeleton and doesn't know how to speak. There's like, she just doesn't have anything to say to you. She just cries.
Yeah.
When you best her, she actually does start talking to you, though. And she ends up like saying, like, I'm sorry that I let these two get to me. They were working for the greenskeeper, and he's the evil one who's been doing all of this. I'm so sorry that I forced you to play against me.
Yeah.
So it is kind of sweet to actually have her start talking to you once you finish her set of holes. But then you move on to hell, where you've got the greenskeeper to face himself. He's got a dragon, like a pet dragon, that will blow wind in one direction or the other, to or against your ball and headed toward the hole. It was kind of strange how, like, I felt like these last three holes were all just sort of like long extended holes to play through.
Yeah.
There was no actual fight against the greenskeeper, where I was kind of expecting to have to face him as well.
Yeah, I don't really have much to say about... I didn't really have anything to say about the caves and hell. I think that's when kind of like when the golf courses just sort of started getting a little bit ridiculous. There isn't too much to say about them, like even aesthetically. Like, if, you know, the levels from hell, just think like the hell levels from any of the Worms games, which I think like... When it comes to like inspirations for this game, the only games I could think of were the Worms titles, even though they're entirely different in how they play, but definitely some similarities. Yeah, but I'm not sure what was up with the greenkeeper's like 1920s like gangster like apparel. It was really strange. I have no idea what's going on there.
It felt like these were just like massive levels that they were just kind of like, let's see you get through these. Haha.
Yeah.
You know, by then I had enough cards stored up that I could just be like, well, whatever. And I've also got the rocket ball pin that I'm using for every single shot. So no big deal. I just have to, you know, find a safe spot to land in and I'm good.
I was a little bit, taken back by like the 18th hole, because it's clearly the only 18th hole that is in the game, like, because it starts off with like an incredibly long drive that you just cannot reach, and I'm just like, okay. And little did I realize that the rest of the characters would jump in and help out.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of sweet that, like, you know, you get to see all of them again, and they come in and like help you get to the final cup. But this is kind of a letdown of a final fight. Like, I wanted something a little bit more.
Yeah.
But hey, like, you know, it was still fun and still cute to finish off. So then, like, once you do that, you then take your character up to Golf Heaven, where you meet the big guy, as the greenskeeper referred to him as the big guy. Not sure how he's going to feel about you making it out of purgatory, but all right.
Golf God.
And he says, like, hey, congratulations, you made it. You're a legend. Now you get to go back and finish your golf game. And, you know, you can return here whenever you want. But remember, you have to start over. So just like any other roguelike, it doesn't really reward you with anything at the end. It just says, like, hey, you finished. Now go ahead and start over if you want.
Yeah. I didn't really like the idea of Golf God. It's just, it almost felt like you just ran out of ideas. But at the end, you probably would have been, like you said, better off maybe just having a greenskeeper boss fight, just like you had with the other characters. And, you know, okay, you can ascend now kind of thing. I wasn't particularly mad on this idea.
Yeah, yeah. Can you imagine if they had said that, like, well, what if we had them actually have to, like, do a boss fight against the golf god? And so you have this giant that you have to fight, and, like, it is supposed to be a culmination of everything you've done throughout the whole game.
I think I was ready for, like, the game to be over at this point, so I'm kind of glad that I am kind of glad it ended how it did end. Like, oh, brilliant, no boss fight. Yeah, that's it. Finito.
Do have some other notes about the development. Was there anything, like, interesting about this game that you thought, like, could be touched on?
Like, just in regards to, like, the whole, like, sort of indie scene. So, I mean, I've always considered my taste in gaming to be, like, sort of pretty eclectic, but when it comes to, like, the indie space, it starts getting a little bit more hairy. I've never really thought of a reason as to why that might be the case, but I guess if I was to shoot from the hip, they rarely feel right to play in my personal opinion. I'm having this problem with a game called Nico Dorico and the Magical World, which is more or less a Crash Bandicoot clone. But I'd say that most people understand how Crash Bandicoot feels in particular to play, the way you time your jumps, like, to the way your attacks connect with the enemy. Nico Dorico inspires to be that, but is very shaky in the way that it executes on its gameplay. Honestly, I platinumed Crash 4, and if you watched me play Nico Dorico, I'd have a very tough time convincing you that I actually platinumed Crash 4.
Oh.
So when it comes to Cursed to Golf, I'm not sure if this game, like, draws from a core inspiration. As I said earlier, I'd like to think it's borrowed elements from other games like Worms, but it is confident in standing on its own two feet as its own, like, own unique thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was reading that it started out as a demo idea on itch.io that just one guy had, and he was the development director for a team, and they were just kind of like, well, let's try making a few levels in this. And then they just kind of made more and more and more and said, oh, cool, like, we've got almost a full-fledged game, let's actually build around this. So
yeah,
its basic idea was just golfing your way two-dimensionally from one location to the next. You know, you just have to hit your ball and it bounces around a couple of times and you have to try and make it to the cup. That's it. And that is a very abstract way to describe golf itself. But, you know, that was the demo that they threw in there where it's just like, okay, well, let's make golf, but kind of like a Metroidvania. And you have to go from point A to point B, but you have to do it in sort of the golf style.
Yeah.
And that was the idea that they started with. So I thought that was pretty cool to learn how the game started out, but, you know, seeing it in its full form, I feel like, okay, well, there's more that you can add to this. One of those things could be like an actual randomized hole. You know, it doesn't have to be completely randomly generated, but it can have tile sets that interlink together with each other. Similar to how like Spelunky builds its levels, where there's like handcrafted pieces that are made for this, but the level randomly generates which pieces fit where. So you're going to see a lot of repeated structures in the game, but they're rearranged in random ways.
Yeah. When I was doing a little bit more research for this podcast, I did come across an article that I'd recommend like checking out if you're interested in this game. I honestly can't remember what it was called. Just off the top of my head, but if you search for this game on nme.com, NME, you'll find a pretty interesting interview with the developer.
Okay, yeah, that's the letters NME.
And yes.
If you just Google curse to golf, NME.com, you're going to find it. So cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you have a recommendation of who should check out Curse to Golf?
I mean, I really dig how this is like a weird roguelike, but also like part of the boss battles is ultimately a single player turn-based game, which kind of doesn't make sense, but yeah, the power and angle meters are fair and you can always rewind your power meter. So the game is ultimately like really approachable. I think anybody who has played the Worms series, particular Worms Golf on the PS3, it's a bit of a stretch, I know, but you might feel strangely a little bit at home here. I'm a massive Worms fan and have never really dabbled in roguelike spaces before, and as I mentioned earlier, I had a total blast with this game. If you're a trophy hunter, this game has a gotcha trophy, so do be wary. If you're unsure, do your research, try it out on a spare account first. But I mean, if you're not into roguelikes, or you're interested in maybe trying one out for the first time, or maybe trying a different one after a bad experience, maybe try this one out. It's not sweaty high action. You can take your time and relax a little to an extent.
Yeah, it is really intimidating at first to totally. Anyone that is weary of like their completion percentage for trophies or whatever, but if you give it a chance and you build some confidence in yourself and that you can finish it and you have some patience with it, like golf itself, you know, you should like feel better about actually attempting.
This is one of the better games. Well, better games. I'll say top five like games I've played this year. No, not necessarily released this year, but among all the games I've played, top five easily.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too. After a while, I started to have fun with it. There were a few quirks where I was just like, you know what, I'm not really feeling this part about it, but I'm still having fun, so I'm enjoying this. One other possible new segment for the show, just because we are now part of the Trophy Jog Network, is I do want to do platinum shoutouts for this game.
Oh, let's go.
And I don't know of anybody else in the Discord who has platinum the game besides you, me, and Josh, who I talked to about this game earlier. And so those, like, as far as I know, we are the only three. So if you're listening and you're part of the Trophy Talk Discord, we are going to start doing platinum shoutouts for the game itself. And, you know, what anyone thought about the game while they were playing it.
Yeah, that's a nice idea. I like this.
Look forward to that coming up. But for now, all I know, like, it's just you and me and Josh that have platinumed it. Josh platinumed it before I even started it. And so when I told him that I was going to do it, he said, that's a hard one. And use your cards liberally.
Yeah, I found out he platted it after I platted it. And you started raging about it is when I found out. Yeah, he didn't give me any warning. So yeah, cheers, Josh.
Okay. And then like for you, like you had such good luck at the beginning that I can't believe you were able to finish it so fast. But
yeah, I think shout out to Green Gorilla. He was pretty annoyed by by my luck.
Yeah. Cade, if you're listening, I encourage you, give it another shot.
Yeah. Son of a bitch.
I want to also have another actual books and more recommendations section for this book club style podcast. Are there other roguelikes that you would recommend? I know that you haven't really dealt in that genre, but are there any that you have played that you would like to recommend to other people?
No, honestly, I've got nothing written for this. I mean, I've got other golf games. I've got something to say about that, but if you have any roguelikes, spit them out.
Well, I think it was April of last year, we talked about Dead Cells, and that's a really good one, but I am terrible at Dead Cells, so I can't recommend it completely, but it is still a lot of fun if you can tolerate just really being beaten down by a roguelike. But still, I love the style of it and what it does. There's another one that I'm sure a lot of people know of, at least, called The Binding of Isaac. And that one I played on PlayStation Vita, and I had a long, long love-hate relationship with it, where I would go through bouts of saying, I love this game and I hate this game at the same time, because I would feel so good about a run I was having and about the equipment that I got, and I could not believe the amount of luck that I was having. And then suddenly something would fuck me over and I'd be like, that's it. Nope. I quit. Like, I cannot believe how much this game just slapped me in the face. Like, I was doing so well and something out of my control screwed me over. And I'm done with this game. And then like the next day I would pick it up because I was on break at work, and I'd just be like, well, I've got 10 minutes. I'm just going to jump in and start another run let's see what I get this time. And, you know, I just kept coming back to it because it was so easy to just jump back in. So The Binding of Isaac, if you love and hate your game time, give that a shot, because it's got quite a following for a really good reason. Those are the two that I could think of. However, I am much more partial to rogue lights, so to speak. And that's like, you know, the light version of a rogue where your stats can carry over, or some sort of stat can carry over from one run to the next. So you keep something, but you do get sent back to the beginning. And we did talk very early on in this show's life about Everspace. And that's one of my favorites still to this day. So go check out Everspace if you like more of the roguelite style, where you don't lose everything when you start over, but you do keep something. So that's also one of my favorite space flight games out there right now. So Everspace, really good. Rogue Legacy is another really good one to jump into if you want to just try something different. But it feels like it has the sort of like the similar style of Curse to Golf. That's like really cute and funny and trying to, but you have a good time while you're playing a roguelike. So that's a great one.
Yeah, I think it is worth mentioning that Curse to Golf does actually have some light elements in it as well.
It does let you carry stuff over after you've reached a certain point.
Yeah, if you've got the foresight to bank cards, then you can use them in future runs as well. I think that's worth noting. You can set up checkpoints as well. I didn't dabble in that, so I can't tell you how it works, but that is a thing.
It is like a single use power that you can use in run. But there is certain other things that you can take advantage of. But the game, again, doesn't really explain that well how to use them.
No, so that is my gripe for this game.
But you brought up that you've got other golf games you love. What are they?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll chat about it later, but I am jamming a little bit on Worms Golf. But I wouldn't say I love this game, but this is more of a shout out for King Walls, who's a Twitch streamer. You might have heard of him. I watch his reels on Instagram a lot, and he played this horror game recently called Greener Grass Awaits. Now, this isn't a roguelike, or this probably is the furthest thing from it, but it's a free game that you can download from itch.io. And there's a clip of him playing this game, and it's so goddamn funny, man. It's one of those horror games where the threat only gets closer to you when you're not looking. You're trying to play a round of golf, like in the middle of the night, and you're just being stalked by this creepy guy. King Wolves like screams so hard his headphones flew off. It's definitely like worth checking out. Like just this video alone, it's worth a laugh. I've just got to mention that.
Greener Grass Awaits.
And yeah.
Now that you've told me what it is, the title makes a lot more sense. I love it.
Yeah, it is a free game for PC, and I think it's only a couple hundred megabytes as well. So if you really want to play it, you can.
Okay. Other ones like, have you tried Walkabout Mini Golf on PSVR?
No, I've got that one downloaded. I really do want to try it.
It is so much fun, and they've added so many mini golf courses to it. It's amazing how much content they've added to that. So, like you and I should probably just tee off a couple of times and try it out together because it's so good. I love it.
Yeah, for sure. 2025 is going to be the year for PSVR 2 for me.
awesome. There are a lot of other games that I want to try out with a few people, but. Walkabout Mini Golf definitely should be one that we try together.
I'm totally down for that. Yeah.
Other golf games from my gaming history, like I had the Mario Golf on Game Boy Advance, and that was like one of the best golf games that I played. Its development was done by Camelot, which they are like RPG developers, so they threw in a lot of RPG DNA to this game, and it felt really good. But it had that basic power bar up and down kind of mechanic to it. And then just throwing in Mario characters to it was a lot of fun. And then all those RPG stuff and the writing to it was really cool. So it felt really deep for a golf game. And then one of the first golf games that I ever played was on my grandpa's Windows PC. And it was just a basic, you know, golf game that anyone from the 90s would remember. So I'm not sure if that was from your time, but it just had the basic power bar up and down, and you would, you know, move the direction of your ball based on the like how you clicked around the screen on the mouse. So yeah, that was the one that I remember most playing when I was a kid. But moving on, other things you're reading, watching, or playing?
I must admit, this game has put me in like a 2D mood as of late.
Oh,
like, so like sort of arcadey, switch your brain off type games, like games, like, you know. So I've been jamming on my PS3 recently playing Worms Golf, because being cursed to golf clearly wasn't enough. It's a slow burner, like just taking my time and clearing all the tasks on each hole before moving on. The thing that kind of sucks is each level requiring a score of like 100,000 points to complete the score challenge. I'm early in the game, so maybe I haven't discovered a more efficient way of farming points, but I'll be firing balls at a 90 degree angle just into the air for like 25 shots just so that I can get like the height points for the ball traveling, which is, it's kind of mundane, but it works. Apart from that, I've also just been feeling the Sonic hype at the moment with maybe one of the worst in the Sonic franchise with Sonic the Hedgehog 4 Part 1 and 2. Part 1 had some nice ideas, but overall failed to be itself, and it just banked too heavily on nostalgia. Part 2 seems to be better, but it's still early days for me at the moment.
Yeah. I'm not sure what it was about Sonic 4 Part 1, but I felt like the animation of it especially just felt sluggish to me. Sonic, for some reason, didn't feel as fast as he could be.
And no.
That might be something to do with how they animated him, or maybe he just actually moved a little bit slower than he did typically in his 2D games. But yeah, that one, that was strange. So that's a subject that we need to have a conversation with, including Jordan, who you and I were part of
in the lost episodes.
A lost episode of Sonic the Hedgehog. So his show, the Finished Game Review, I think is going to be starting up soon. So I'm in talks with him about possibly rebooting that and doing the Sonic episode again. So
yeah, he's spoken to me about that as well.
Yeah. Hopefully that starts up again soon. But, I want to highlight that as well as, you know, possibly showing up in 2025. Yeah, Sonic 4, man. What a game to, have so much hope for and then, you know, not really get what I wanted. But,
yeah, it's just my main problem with, the Sonic games from that era, and it still sort of lingers a little bit, is that they bank too much on nostalgia, man. Everyone loved, Green Hills and Chemical Plant Zone or whatever level, and it's just move on. People liked Sonic Heroes, but people like the original stuff. It's just, maybe get some more talent that respects the Hedgehog rather than respects those ideas a bit too much, if that makes sense.
I understand. Yeah. Sonic Mania was really good, but some of its best levels were the original ones. And, I feel like it really, it didn't quite have enough originality to it.
Yeah. So, just be yourself, Sonic. Be yourself.
Yeah. Even though I'll have to say in Sonic Mania, Chemical Plant Zone, still, that one was great.
It slaps.
Yeah.
That hits the nostalgia in the right way, though.
It does.
Sonic 4 just didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's one more recommendation that I've got, and that's for next month. And next month, we're going to be talking about B Simulator. That's the featured game. When I first said, that's what we're going to be talking about, to my wife, she was like, what is that, Goat Simulator? And no, Goat Simulator is a joke that was made using the Grand Theft Auto engine. I think it was. I haven't done my research about Goat Simulator, but B Simulator is where you're not simulating a bee as a beekeeper. You are playing as the bee, and you are flying around trying to pollinate flowers. You're trying to defend your hive from other insects and collect other things around the world. So this one's going to be interesting. I watched a trailer and was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool. Well, we'll see what happens. And it's going to be kind of a fun one because I've been eyeing it a couple of months and thinking this could be interesting. I have no idea what this game is going to be like, but here we go. Let's try out Bee Simulator. So
it's a simulator for everything now, though.
Yeah. There's Lawn Mowing Simulator, Power Wash Simulator. Oh, both those are on Extra, but we're going to be talking about Bee Simulator this time. So this is going to be fun, I think. And remember that you can be part of the show by writing into psplusgameclub@gmail.com to share your thoughts about Bee Simulator or recommend any games for future episodes. You can find me on Discord at the Portland Kevin if that's the way you'd like to contact the show. Also look for the PlayStation Plus Game Club Discord or the Trophy Talk Network Discord, and you can write about what we're playing at that time, through those. You can also participate in those new Patreon tiers that we were talking about earlier. Max, remind us again where people can find you and what your new content is.
Yeah, so you can find me on the Trophy Talk podcast Discord at Maximum Carnage. That's spelled with two X's. And yes, once again, I run the Moogle Cast. Our next episode, we're going to be doing like a sort of nostalgia trip on the N64. And Kevin, you'll be joining us for that alongside my new co-host, Zach Ellery. So yeah, I think the 19th of January, off the top of my head, I think that's when the episode is due out. So keep an eye out for it then.
Absolutely looking forward to that, because the Nintendo 64 is one of my favorite Nintendo generations out there.
Yeah, it's got a special place in my heart as well.
Yeah. So again, thank you very much for joining me today to talk about Crystal Golf. Thank you for picking it, because I wouldn't have picked it myself. I would not have played this game without you.
Yeah, but just one more shout out to Kyle Stevenson for, I guess, sort of recommending this game to me, even though he didn't do it personally or anything. But like, if you're interested in exploring indies or anything like that, please go check out his 6-1 Indies. He recently did the Indie Game Awards, I think was the week after the Game Awards show. And apparently that was very well received. I'm sorry, Kyle, I didn't watch it. But... But no, he's doing some incredible stuff over there, and of course at the trophy room with Joseph as well. So yeah, support all your content creators, man. Not just us. Support those guys. Support Sacred Symbols, and just absolutely anybody talking about video games. Just keep it all alive, man. Talk about video games. We love it.
Please go over onto Kinda Funny as well, like, and support them, because. Like that's how I found, like, because of the Kinda Funny Facebook group, that's how I found Trophy Talk. It was because Josh had shared the Trophy Talk podcast in the Kinda Funny Facebook group. And he just happened to post that once, and I happened to see it. So, you know, share your content creators out there. Please share the PlayStation Plus Game Club. Please share the Moogle Cast. It's all out there, and we love talking about games, but we also love having people listen to us talk about games, because we want more people to talk with us about games.
Yeah. A quick reminder on the Moogle Cast, actually. It is changing from DLC pack to Moogle Cast. And to be honest, I think I'm just going to like keep the episode numbers rolling. So you're going to see Moogle Cast episode 6. And if you're backtracking, you're probably not going to see episode 5. And that's just going to be called DLC pack. So yeah, if you made it this far.
It takes me back to the 90s where, you know, I'd hear about a TV show that I thought sounded interesting, and I just have to jump in on episode 6 and get caught up on what the hell happened in the last 5 episodes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like my only thought process behind it was like when you first like find a podcast and you see that it's on like episode 1 or like 2, 3, you think, oh, they're still going to have like sort of teething issues and they're going to get like their structure down. Mm-hmm. So if I just keep it at like episode 6, then people are like, oh yeah, okay, this probably seems a good point to jump in. They've probably like found their footing by now.
Look, from listening to your last few episodes, it sounds like you know what the hell you're doing already. So you got nothing to worry about.
I am very flattered. Please stop.
well, Max, thank you again for joining me to talk about Curse to Golf. It's been great.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and again, yes, thank you for accommodating me. I know we're quite a few hours apart. It's almost 8 p.m. over here. So thank you very much.
Well, yeah, and again, have a great day. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great day and have fun playing.